This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the July 6, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. And for your benefit, today we have Bob Braunstein. Bob is a seminar presenter, retired Fed, explains things to me that I couldn't, in my best day, hope to understand. And we're going to be talking about Social Security, disability, and some things that sometimes are not directly on the radar, but should be. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Well, better now that I know you're hooked in. Not that there was ever a question, but because our show would last about 2 minutes if I had to discuss what you're going to discuss. So you present seminars, I present seminars, and I would like to think that both of us, when we walk in, we sometimes speak another language, not on purpose, but because to explain to people how benefits work, how taxes work, how finances work, it takes somewhat of an art to be able to put that into understandable language for most. And no disrespect to anybody, but once you dig into this, sometimes it is hard to follow, even for the people that do it professionally. So, Bob, take us one step down the garden path. And you have a set of prearranged topics, but I think you probably have a better feel for where they are put in the order of discussion.
Sure. And as you mentioned, Bob, I do present seminars for NITP. And even though we don't really go over the topic for today in great detail, Social Security disability, we do get questions about it. We talk about the Office of Personnel Management's disability retirement option, which is given to certain individuals, and the need to apply for Social Security once you do retire under that structure. So it's important to know from that standpoint, you know, what indeed are Social Security disability insurance benefits as opposed to Social Security. Everybody eventually qualifies for retirement benefit, assuming they've been working for FICA taxed income, FICA tax, that's the Social Security and Medicare tax. But sometimes you don't work for as long as you need to in order to qualify for Social Security. Social Security retirement requires you to work for 10 years. It used to be every calendar quarter of 10 years, 40 quarters. It's now 40 credits. What if you only worked for 5 and you had a disabling condition? Now, it's important to understand that Social Security will pay benefits to people with disabling medical conditions under their Social Security Disability Insurance Program, SSDI. But there's a very strict requirement for these conditions. So federal law requires that the condition that you have to begin with means that you're expected to not be able to work for at least 1 year, or that this condition will result in your death. So in other words, you're looking at not being able to work for at least a year. And the reason I mention this is because there are programs out there that give money to people with partial disabilities or short-term disabilities. It could be less than a year, whether it's a short-term disability insurance program associated with a private company or even long-term. Social Security doesn't do that. So you qualify for benefits. And interestingly enough, if you did qualify for disability benefits, which we'll get into in more detail, much the same as Social Security retirement benefits, if you have dependents, and oftentimes you're more likely to have dependent children when you're disabled long before you would have reached the age to retire under Social Security, they can get benefits as well. That's just a brief introduction.
Okay, so when you address glasses, I'm sure, much like the other speakers, you have to put this into understandable language. But I would think more important, when you discuss a topic in understandable language, somebody will say, I didn't know that, or my friend has this issue. So as far as a benefit goes, the more the people have an education that there are things beyond the obvious, if they discovered it later, they would lose some benefit that if they had discovered it earlier and claimed that benefit.
Correct. Absolutely true. One of the things that I typically am asked about is, well, Social Security, retirement. If I don't get there, if I'm disabled, how do they figure my benefit? Why is it different to begin with? How do I even qualify if I'm disabled? To get disability benefits, if you're a federal employee, you basically make an application to retire, and you prove medically as well as performance-wise that you can no longer do your current job at your current grade and pay. You can't do any other job in the general commuting area in which you work at the same grade and pay. Your agency has reasonably accommodated you by trying if there were other jobs at your same grade and pay. And you can't do that. You have documentation both medically and performance-wise that you can't do it. And that gives you the disability retirement. And then OPM says, all right, well, once you meet the disability requirements and you go out, Office of Personnel Management says you must put an application in for disability. So it's worth talking about just to understand that if you are in that situation, that you have to put in an application and meet the following rules. There's something called a recent work test. Social Security says they're going to give you benefits based on how old you are when you became disabled, as well as when did you last work? How much did you have to work to even qualify? And they have even unique circumstances for blind people. For example, let's just say I have this medically determined disabling condition and I qualify for benefits and I'm 34 years of age. Under Social Security's lexicon, they're saying that if you are 34 and become disabled and we're going to pay you benefits, we need to see that you have worked and paid the FICA tax for at least 3 years. If you're disabled before 28, it's only 1.5 years. And then as you go along this continuum, this is very interesting. Let's say your disability occurs very, very late in life, late in your career. Let's say it's around age 60. 2 years before you typically would be eligible for that retirement benefit. At a minimum, you need 9.5 years at age 60 if you're going to retire under their disability provisions. This is assuming you have the medical condition that qualifies you. This condition, once again, has to be a medical condition that's going to last for at least a year or results in your death. And believe me, there's much more to it than that. But you have to at least apply for this benefit once you get an OPM-approved disability retirement. The next question I get oftentimes is, well, okay, if I have to put that in, I mean, what are they going to want from me? Obviously, they're going to want the medical information, which is exactly what disqualified you for your current job, and that's a start. They need things like Social Security number, birth certificate, but very obvious things, names and addresses, phone numbers of your doctors and caseworkers, medicines that you take, medical records, lab results, where you've worked, and copy your most recent W-2s, and if you're self-employed, your tax returns, and so on. But it's also very, very important that they analyze your medical condition. And it starts with Social Security, but then it gets passed on to the state to determine what that disability is. They review your application to begin with to make sure you meet the basic requirements. Did you work enough years to qualify? They evaluate any current work activities. I mean, if you're still working, it's pretty clear that you're not really disabled. So you really have to be in a situation where you're not going to work for at least a year. And assuming that this initial analysis done by Social Security is met, they forward your case to the Disability Determination Services Office in the state in which you live. And this is very important because states have different criteria for disability retirement, for disability benefits under Social Security. They have lists of things that you automatically would be qualified for a disabling condition. They have a list of disabling conditions, and every state's list is a little bit different. The state actually completes the determination. Doctors and specialists, the agency asked your doctors for information about your case, and they'll look at medical evidence. These are the states that are doing this. They may need even more information from you other than the information I mentioned before they can actually decide if you're disabled. So mind you, you have this condition. It's going to prevent you from working for at least a year, might result in your death, but your state is going to go through a rather complex evaluation to determine whether you have a valid disability that would give you Social Security disability insurance. It's a five-step process, and it's pretty simple, but it gets complex insofar as how they look at it. Number one, are you still working? If you're working and your earnings average more than a certain amount each month, you're not going to be considered disabled. That's the end of the story. But if not, they go on to step two. So let's assume that you're not working. Number two, does your medical condition significantly limit your ability to do basic work activities? And then we're talking about things that you do in any job. You got to lift things, stand up, walk around, sit, remember. And will this limit you for at least 12 months? So if the answer to that is yes, fine. If not, game over. But if you do have problems with these things, then they go on to the next step. Does your medical condition meet the medical requirements of the state's listing of qualified conditions? As I mentioned before, each state has a different listing of impairments that they would consider severe enough to give you immediate disability retirement. And if you don't meet those criteria, they may have to do some additional digging. Each listing, experts specify medical and other findings needed to satisfy the criteria. But if you're not on that list, they look at other things. I mean, they'll look at respiratory problems, cardiovascular problems, musculoskeletal, neurological, oncological. They go very, very deep into your record. It's a very long list of possible conditions you need proof that you have. The best thing that could happen, if indeed you are disabled, is to be on their list. But if not, it's just going to take a little longer to adjudicate, or you might not get adjudicated. Step four, what they're going to look at is, all right, unlike OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, that says if you can't do the current level of work you're doing or the same level of work in another job, they'll give you the disability retirement, and they'll say that, you know, you can continue working, but you can't exceed 80% of the compensation you were getting when you took the disability retirement. Social Security looks at, did you work before? Can you do the work you did before? And if you can't, they go to the last step. Can't do previous work. The state is now going to look at any work that you might be able to do. And this is going to take into account age, education, past work experience, any skills you have. So assuming you can't do any kind of gainful employment, case closed, you qualify. But if you can, you don't. Then you finally get the disability that will entitle you to receive Social Security disability insurance. You get a letter from the state, explains what the benefit's going to be. It'll be monthly. It'll start on the first full 6 months after you became disabled. And if you don't qualify, there's an appellate process that comes in the letter. If they say you weren't qualified, right to representation, there's a whole variety of things. So the big, big difference that we're looking at, Bob, is unlike the OPM benefit, Office of Personnel Management's Disability Retirement, which essentially looks at your current level of work. And if you can't do your current level of work at your current grade and pay in either the job that you're in or other jobs in that organization in the same commuting area in which you reside, and you have the documentation for it, then they give you the disability retirement, which has a rather lucrative formula, particularly if you're disabled long before you would otherwise be eligible to retire. Social Security looks way beyond your current level of work. They look to see if you can work at all, the work you did before, what your education, what your skill set will allow you to do. And in essence, if you can be gainfully employed, even if it's not at the same level, then they are very, very likely not to qualify you for their disability benefit.
Okay, why don't we take a short break? We've got an email question here, and we'll pick it back up after the break. And the question is, I read that by law, SSA, Social Security Administration, will have to cut benefits. Do annuities make sense in order to get a lifetime stream of income to offset the cuts in SSA? And again, Social Security is one thing. The annuity that an individual earns from federal service, whether it's FERS, whether it's CSRS, whether it's offset or whatever, that's not what they were talking about here. They were talking about buying an annuity. But let's pick that up when we come back.
You have life insurance to protect the people you love. As a civilian federal employee, you have two choices designed specifically for you, WEPA and Fegley. The big difference? Price. Chances are WEPA premiums will cost you less. In fact, the average WEPA member saves $375 per year on premiums. Prioritize your peace of mind with a life insurance policy designed for feds by feds. If you're a civilian federal employee interested in comparing WEPA to Fegley, visit WAEPA.org today. WEPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Network, 1500 a.m. WEPA has been insuring the future of federal workers for more than 75 years. See why over 46,000 feds have already switched to WEPA at WAEPA.org.
Well, welcome back to 4-Year Benefit. We're here today, July 6, 2020, and we're talking with Bob Braunstein. And Bob has forgotten more about federal benefits, Social Security, and the like than most people, well, certainly on the other side of the mic, know. And we had just we took a commercial break. Sorry about that. And we got an email here. And here's the email. I read that by law, Social Security Administration will have to cut benefits. Do annuities make sense in order to get lifetime stream of income to offset any cuts? Now, what the individual is talking about here, an annuity is not to be confused with your federal annuity based on years in service and highest compensation. The question was, should I go out and buy an annuity? Bob and I won't go near that, but with the preponderance of people that we talk with, they're FERS. So that they look at three sources of income in retirement, the annuity distributions from the thrift, as well as Social Security. That's a juggling act of its own. I don't know in that case if it makes sense to buy an annuity outside of those three. But we'll go there in a while. Bob was on a train, and I'm sorry if I derailed the train for just a second. Let's get back on the tracks.
It's okay. Well, you know, it's important. I mean, the questioner is talking about by law that Social Security will have to cut benefits. It's not so much law. It's the number of workers to sustain the benefit that's being paid to retirees. The initial system, as you recall, Bob, and we both know this, and we weren't alive then, but in 1935 is when Social Security was invented. And people weren't living as long, and there were many, many, many more folks in the workplace than there were retired, so it wasn't an issue. I think there were like 16 workers for every retiree. What's happened more recently, however, is that ratio has shrunk considerably. And the critical ratio that has to be maintained is one that's three workers for every retiree. And it's for the first time in history because of this baby boom bubble, which is entering the ranks of Social Security at the rate of 10,000 per day, 300,000 per month, and will continue to do so for a number of years to come, that ratio has fallen below the critical 3-to-1. So what this has meant is that money that's in surplus, the trust funds, et cetera, is being used to sustain a 3-to-1 ratio. In other words, the benefits don't have to drop. And the surplus money can only last so long. So theoretically, if the government were to do nothing and we reach this year 2034 that you keep hearing about in all the news, et cetera, that Social Security is going to implode, it's not going to implode. It's going to be a 2-to-1 ratio roughly in 2034, and there's no more surplus money to sustain benefits at its current level. So you're looking at roughly 21% drop in the current level of benefits, not 2/3. 21%, because you know this better than I do, and we'll talk about it because I have a question to ask you about taxes. Social Security is taxed by the federal government for many people, and they do take in some of their revenue through taxes. Most of it comes through the payroll tax. So what has been proposed to fix Social Security? If we can't do anything about the demographic, one of the proposals is to raise the tax, the payroll tax, from its current 6.2% to maybe 7.4 or 7.3. That's going to give a lot of additional money to Social Security. Yes, it's a tax increase, but it's a payroll tax increase. Another proposed suggestion, which probably would not be as onerous for most people, because very few people make this kind of money, is that the current cap on Social Security earnings each year, I think is a little, right now it's a little over $137,000. If you're fortunate enough to make that kind of money and make more, then when you go above that cap, you no longer have the FICA tax pulled out for Social Security. There's been a proposal to allow people to continue, I should say, to have people continue to pay the payroll tax on up to $400,000 of income. Again, this is not going to affect most people. The average family of four in the United States, I think the income is about $60,000, $65,000. But for many of the folks at the higher levels, they'll be paying more. This is going to bring additional money into Social Security. So both of these things, raising the FICA tax, raising the cap, could give Social Security another 50 or 60 years of half-life at its current level of payment to people without doing really anything else. And it wouldn't affect that many folks, particularly the latter of those two suggestions. So it's not so much a question of law, it's a question of numbers. Now, I raised an issue, and I need to understand this because you're the tax guru. Maybe you could explain to me, number one, I have a couple questions for you, Bob. Why is Social Security taxed, at least by the federal government? Because I know there's some states that don't tax it. And long-term disability and workers' compensation and things like that, I know those are not taxable, but is Social Security disability taxable? And if so, why?
Well, Social Security disability would probably get a buy because it's disability rather than just flat-out Social Security. Social Security without a disability, let's call it. So if somehow that disability percentage, I remember working on a couple cases years ago where there was an argument, there was a discussion as to what percent they were disabled. And of course, the lower the percent, the less the government might have to pay. And the higher percent, the individual is helped. But after a certain income level, disability income is taxable, much like a not often, but somewhat often, a disability income insurance policy. Sometimes those aren't taxable depending on the severity of the disability. I'm not giving you a great answer point blank because there is no great answer because they got the fuzzy points. You know, how much are you being paid? How much were you paid? And oftentimes it winds up in court. It's not a court like a court of law, but it's a judicial hearing within Social Security.
Well, what about, I know there's there are different tax thresholds. I've heard, and I think I know the reason why, but I know I can get a better explanation from you. The majority of people in the country, I would say the majority, but half the country will wind up paying no federal tax, even on a Social Security retirement benefit. You mentioned income thresholds. What are those? In other words, when would I pay no federal tax on any Social Security benefit?
The income level would have to be, and they call this, used to have a term called adjusted gross income. Gross income. Let's just take away the complexity. This is all your income minus certain deductions. Alrighty, so if you looked at your tax return, it's generally the number at the bottom right-hand side of the first page. And you'd go, well, why is it like that? Because if one's income is above a certain level, they're perceived to not necessarily need certain types of benefits. So there would be a cutoff, or they would no longer be tax-free. I think that's what we're talking about. Between zero and X, if our income is there and X is a certain dollar amount, we wouldn't pay tax on Social Security. But if the income goes above that, then a portion of it's taxed. And if it goes even more beyond that, a greater percentage is taxed. So it's looking at somebody that's entitled to Social Security and they don't want to tax them if their benefit is small and they're, you know, they're just making ends meet. But somebody that's maybe retired on a nice high three and they have some other income, they're probably going to pay tax on up to 85% of Social Security. Now, it's never 100% taxable. So there are different steps. And if I was to go through each step for each different filing status, we'd be here till noon. So, in other words, you're talking about somebody single, somebody married joint, somebody head of household, somebody qualifying widow or widower. And that's too much to do.
85%. That's not the tax of it.
No, it's 80. If okay. Social Security benefit was, say, $20,000, they wouldn't pay tax on 20. They'd pay tax on 85% of 20, which would be $17,000.
Ah, okay. Sometimes I get that question too. What do you mean, 85% taxed? No.
No.
It's at your bracket then that you're.
Right.
Got it.
Well, it's not the tax bracket, it's the inclusion in the income. So again, if our Social Security benefit was $20,000, $40,000, whatever the number is, they pay tax on, generally speaking, 40% of it. 80% of it. Okay.
All right. Well, you're on a roll, so I have to throw this question in too. So if my Social Security added to my income is pushing me into a higher tax bracket, should I continue working, or should I just kind of like, hey, you know, I don't want to pay those taxes. I want to get back to that lower bracket, so I'm going to cut out half of my work. Does that make sense?
I always follow your subject, federal benefits. And oftentimes I follow somebody that's talking about finance, and somebody comes up and says, can you explain what a tax bracket is and what gets me in there? And here's it right out of the classroom. I think we've all gone into a hotel, a high-rise hotel, and we come in the lobby level. It's the lowest level for that hotel. Unfortunately, the elevators are out, so we can't just get in the elevator and press a button. Now, here's where the analogy focuses on tax. When you walk in, you're at your lowest tax level. So everybody listening, everybody that should be listening, the first dollars that they pay taxes on are not the whole amount. So from zero to X. Now, again, the elevator is out, so we walk up the first flight. That first flight, we pay tax at a lower level. Unfortunately, we got to walk up four flights. So we go up the next flight. Now we're paying a higher tax. It's almost like a toll charge. So, and then you've probably heard people say, my friend got a raise and it put him into a higher tax bracket and they lost money. Well, numerically it's impossible, but it gets the point home. If you layer on top of your otherwise normal income some others, I'm not saying you're going to go into a lower bracket, but that's what causes, they call it bracket creep sometimes. In the reverse, somebody's income might be equal to the penny what it was in the prior year, but their tax rates go up. And you go, how can that happen? Maybe they don't have as many tax benefits as far as writing off a mortgage interest, real estate taxes, et cetera, although they're all compartmentalized. So somebody, again, same thing, and all of a sudden their tax bracket goes up. It's because they had something with regards to their taxable income. Again, I don't want to put anybody to sleep here, but taxable income is really this. It's all your income subject to tax, so it would be your salary, minus the money you put into the traditional thrift. So if your salary was $50,000 and you put $5,000 into the thrift, you only report $45,000. You follow me? And then they earn some interest. That's 100% taxable. Well, they are lucky and they bought a mutual fund that pays a dividend. That's taxed at a lower rate. Now, this will make your hair hurt, but the point I'm trying to get at is tax rates, the overall one you can get to, but then the special rate for, again, certain type of dividends. Maybe somebody was lucky enough to buy and sell a stock, and they made what's called a capital gain. That's taxed at a lower rate. But, you know, how's anybody to know all this? That's why, the sun shines on accountants. Because we can understand
that. That's why I would come to you.
All right, but you know full well, I come to you more often. Bob, how does this high three work? They started federal service in the 50s, and you always explain it, but I can't understand it. Anyway, I hope made sense, folks.
That's why I'm glad I can rely on you, and you're definitely answering these questions for me. Let's bat the ball back to my corner, too, and talk about a question that I get frequently, and we do actually address this in seminars. Can I get an OPM disability retirement benefit, at the same time, I receive Social Security benefits. Because sometimes you do qualify for both. It's rare that they happen coincidentally, but we can look at that. I mean, generally speaking, you can't. OPM is, however, going to offset what they pay you, what Social Security pays you, if you qualify for both. So if you applied for both, and let's just say they were simultaneously approved, this is extremely rare because it takes Social Security at least 5 or 6 months, and it may take even longer than that if you don't have one of those state-specified disabling conditions, and they're doing a deeper dive into what your medical condition is. If they were approved at the same time, then your OPM disability pension would subtract 100% of the Social Security disability benefit that you're getting. And that's only during the first year. So, for example, if your OPM annuity were $2,000 per month and your Social Security disability payment was $1,300, OPM would subtract that $1,300 from their $2,000 and they would pay you $700. And then you get that $1,300 benefit from Social Security. So when you look at it this way, you're not really losing money. OPM would have otherwise given you $2,000 a month. Now you're getting $700 plus $1,300 from Social Security. Same thing. Where it becomes a little bit more lucrative is during the second, third, fourth year up until you reach 62. In other words, beyond year number one, if you're qualified for both, the Office of Personnel Management reduces the annuity they pay you by 60% of the Social Security disability amount you're receiving. So let's look at the same example. Getting $2,000 a month from OPM, and I'm getting $1,300 from Social Security, but they're only going to subtract 60% of it, or $780, and I wind up with $1,220 from OPM and $1,300 from Social Security, which added together is over $2,500 a month. So now I'm getting two benefits that are bigger than the singular OPM retirement benefit. And it will continue this way until I reach what otherwise would have been my retirement age for Social Security. That's 62. OPM at that point no longer offsets their disability retirement by any Social Security disability amount. Social Security in most situations at this point in time would change the disability payment to a retirement payment, but they wouldn't change the amount. Then you'd be able to get your whatever your OPM annuity is, and there's a final factoring of that formula, which I don't really want to get into because it's kind of complicated, and Social Security pays you the benefit. So in essence, they don't really cancel each other out. It's only just during that first year where you're looking at a major deduction of the entire Social Security amount from your OPM disability retirement, but it's extremely rare that you qualify for both within that first year. So usually you're looking at 60% reduction if you do qualify for both. I also get the question, will receiving Social Security disability cancel out my my OPM benefit? And it's only in the Social Security payment amount during that first year. Your benefit for retirement in Social Security is very, very different than disability, based on your best 35 years of earnings. And that's averaged. Social Security calls this average index monthly earnings. That's the basis for how they give you their benefit. So obviously, if you become disabled before you've worked 35 years, your payment is going to be based on a much lower number of years that you worked. Average income could actually even be higher during this brief period. So you could eventually qualify for retirement because you worked long enough to do so, but you may be looking at a Social Security disability amount at that time that's higher than what otherwise would have been your age 62 retirement amount. So even though OPM is going to change it to, quote, a retirement benefit, staying with the SSDI, the Social Security disability amount, might be your better option. But here's an interesting thing. Remember, 62 is the earliest time one can qualify for and apply for Social Security in most situations. And there's an age reduction associated with that. Social Security drawn at 62 is generally reduced for age by 25 to 30%, depending upon what your full retirement age is, FRA. Generally, for most of us these days, Social Security's full retirement age is 67, but it's somewhere between 66 and 67, depending on where you're born. Let's just say, for example, I'm getting Social Security disability in the amount of $2,000 a month, and I hit age 62, and I'm looking at a work-based benefit at that time of $1,750. Well, Social Security says if your lower amount for retirement purposes is something you don't want to claim at 62, you can just let that ride. Hang on to your disability benefit. Hang on to it until you're 67. And then your actual retirement benefit might be $2,400, $2,500 because it grows by 30%. You can then switch at full retirement age to the Social Security retirement amount that you were on track to get before you were disabled, if it's higher. Or if it's never going to be higher, you stay with the disability amount, and OPM simply changes its label. So Bob, these are things that are important to know. Yes, sir.
Bob, I have to take a break. My hand is getting tired. I'm taking all these notes.
Your hair is hurting. Okay.
So let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about would it make sense to limit my work activities rather than pay higher taxes, and why do I have to pay taxes on this?
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're in the final lap of today's show regarding Social Security. And to try to make, and not try, to that does a very good job at making a difficult subject to understand, Bob Bronstein. I'm going to just I was taking so many notes. I'm going to have to talk now. So give me about 3 minutes, Bob. So
okay.
a couple questions came in, and one of it said, would it make sense to limit my work activities to avoid higher taxes? So what we're talking about is work activity as well as Social Security earnings. And somebody's going to say you're crazy, but here's the question: it's always good to pay more tax on more income than to pay less income tax on no income. So you know, if you work because you want to work, some people work because they have to work. But the point being is because they have a certain type of income, this is called earned income, it's subject to income taxes as well as Social Security tax. Now, if that same person had invested some money in a mutual fund and the mutual fund pays dividends, they're taxable but at a very low rate. Why? It encourages people to make investments. It hopefully stimulates the economy. So there's a logic behind most of this. There's some illogic, too. But for the most part, I would say an average taxpayer has a salary, maybe an annuity. Both are subject to tax, maybe at different rates. And maybe they have an investment. Maybe that investment pays interest. It's taxable. Maybe it's not interest. It's put into a mutual fund and they get dividends. It's taxable. Why? Because it's income to the individuals. Not all earned income being your salary, small business profit or the like, and the other would be unearned income, which sounds horrible, but it doesn't have anything to do with your work. It's how much you saved. And you go, okay, but why do I have to pay taxes on Social Security? You tax me all throughout my career on my salary, minus, let's say, the thrift distribution and some other things. And now I have to pay taxes on something that I earned. Well, that's the key. You earn Social Security credits. I think that's the term, Bob. The more credits I have, the more I get. And so that's tax logic, if you will. And tax logic basically says if you have a source of income, not 100%, but close to 100% of it, are they going to tax it one way or another? Did that make sense, Bob?
I think so. What I heard you said is kind of compelling. You talked about dividends and things of that nature. And I get questions all the time, which I defer to you or the financial speakers, like, okay, so if I'm getting an annuity, is that taxed the same way my normal biweekly paycheck is taxed? Or if I'm getting dividends on an investment, I know there are taxes on that, but it's taxed. Is it taxed differently? I mean, what's the formula?
Okay,
for
and with regards to all of our salaries, we pay FICA, Medicare, and maybe some other type taxes through it. But that's the major ones, other than state and local income taxes. All right, why do they do that? Because the tax system says it's a pay as you go. You work, you pay into the system. Later, you get a benefit, Social Security. Or a pension, but we're really focusing in on Social Security rather than pensions today. And the individual says, well, I was lucky enough after a certain period of time that I could save some money. And probably the best place to put it, not necessarily 100% of the time, but probably the best place to put it is into the TSP. And then you go Roth TSP, traditional TSP. My answer would be another show. But the point is, you put it in there, and you go, well, why? Because as it earns income between the time we put it in and when we withdraw it, we've paid no taxes on the earnings. So Congress is not about to say, well, just put it in there and you'll never have to pay taxes on it. And some people would, you know, argue with me and say it's a double tax. And I said, it's not really a double tax. You were paid tax on the money that you put into the investment, and then it earned money. And they still don't like it, but, I mean, that's the concept. And I think in the quietest moment, somebody will say, I think I got that now. Did that make sense, Bob?
Here's a question for you.
Okay.
It does. But here's a question. I was taking notes like crazy. I get this question all the time. So I'm putting traditional money into the TSP. And I know that I don't have to pay federal tax on that money or state tax for that matter, because one sort of leads into the next. But is that money being taxed by Social Security?
Yes, because in order for you to be able to put money into the TSP, for you to be able to put money into an IRA, generally, there's always an exception, but generally you have to have, quote, earned income. What's earned income? Salary, wage, small business profit, et cetera. In other words, you were compensated because you worked. And then Congress said, well, we have the system we want to put into place and we need to fund it. So if somebody is working, then we'll have them pay Social Security taxes. It would provide the individual a double benefit. Eventually, they'll get a cash flow for the money that was withheld from them, and the employer matches it so that it's a system such that somebody will have something when they retire. Will that be enough to retire? Maybe not. Maybe so. And somewhere in between. So somebody said, well, I don't have the choice. And that's true. You don't have the choice. But I would say many people that maybe didn't save a lot during their career, now they have Social Security and they have some money in the thrift. It helps them afford retirement better. Or better yet, they don't have to retire at a later age. They can retire at an early age because they have this backdrop for income. Did that help, Bob?
Okay, it does. So just to put it in simple math so I understand it, let's just say I'm fortunate enough to be making $80,000 a year, and I'm a federal employee, and I'm taking $5,000 of those dollars, and I'm putting it into traditional TSP. So for tax purposes, it's $75,000, not that five. But since Social Security taxes with the payroll tax, the FICA tax, amounts up to over $137,000. The entire $80,000 that I'm earning is subject to the Social Security tax, the FICA tax, correct?
Correct.
Okay. See, you cleared that up for me, because I get that question. Sometimes I get confused. As long as we're on that subject, though, just a Yeah, go ahead.
FICA, if an individual makes an awful, awful lot of money, sometimes the FICA drops off. So it's not limitless.
Yeah, you got to be over 137 grand, right?
Yeah, but not everybody makes that kind of money. But it was just so that somebody going, I think there's an exception. Well, the exception is if they go over a certain amount. And correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, that goes up each year with some factor of the cost of living, the threshold?
Yeah, it goes up with the taxable wage base. The formulas that determine Social Security go up a little bit each year. The cap goes up a little each year. The amount of money that you can earn in addition to claiming a Social Security benefit early goes up a little bit each year, but not by huge amounts.
Okay.
But I wanted to, before we left the show today, I wanted to go back on one very important topic, this idea of working and getting Social Security disability. Working in, when you have an OPM disability retirement. Generally speaking, let's look at OPM disability retirements. If you go back to work, you know, you could technically be looked upon as no longer being disabled. And OPM says, well, you wouldn't be disabled if the income you're receiving in this work that you're doing exceeds 80% of the compensation you were receiving in the job from which you took your disability retirement. So they'll look at that, and then they'll say you're restored, or maybe you're medically restored. Social Security also has special rules associated with working if you have a disability. They will definitely let you work, but you have to report that work to them. They'll even give you special training, rehabilitation, that you need to go to work. There are a couple of very interesting programs that Social Security offers for working people while disabled. There's a publication they've come out with, Working While Disabled, How We Can Help, and that publication is available on their website. But the two important programs that they discuss, number one, the Ticket to Work program, which helps you with training and other services you may need to go to work at the allowable levels, and this doesn't cost you anything. And then they have this amazing, it's called Achieve a Better Life Experience account. It's an ABLE account, which is tax advantage. You probably know more about that than I do, for individuals with disabilities. And you can save money for all kinds of disability-related expenses. And what's really amazing about this is that anyone, including the account owner, family, friends, you name it, can contribute to your ABLE account. And that can be used to help you defray the costs of many of your disability-related expenses. All of these things are explained very specifically on Social Security's website. Again, SSDI is what we're talking about, Social Security Disability Insurance. Not to be confused with Social Security retirement, not to be confused with Social Security income, which could be paid if you are elderly or need help or you have disabilities. That's a means-tested, totally separate benefit. It's important to highlight the benefit you're looking for. And what we're talking about here, and what we've been talking about for the entire show, is disability. So that's the key.
Thank you. Maybe I can explain one-tenth of that to somebody after today's show. Thanks, Bob. So Andrew tells us we have about 4.5 minutes left. So final thoughts, Bob? Questions you want to throw?
Well, my thinking is that, you know, I always tell people in class to live long and prosper because I'm a Star Trek fanatic, and do not become disabled. But if you do become disabled, don't despair. I mean, it's extremely important to do your homework. I run into so many folks who are really disabled, Bob, and shouldn't be working. But for some reason, their performance history is not reflecting the problem. They're actually, in many cases, getting superior ratings, or at least fully successful ratings, which sets up a dichotomy, a problem. OPM is saying, number one, you have to be disabled, but we need to see proof of the fact in performance that you were also disabled. So if your boss is giving you good ratings, fully successful or higher, it doesn't prove the disability. We need more than medical information. We need performance history. So you got to talk to your boss and say, stop being nice to me. In other words, it's not that you're telling me I'm a bad person. You're recognizing my disabling condition is preventing me from doing the work. So many disabilities are not approved because the performance history doesn't match the severity of the medical problem. Now, there are many, many more hurdles, that one has to go through at the state level for Social Security disability, because states will look deep into your medical history. They're going to look at the work you did before. They're going to look at your training. They're going to look at your education. It's an extremely heavy lift if you're not really fully disabled and not on one of those state lists of disabling conditions that automatically qualifies you for Social Security disability. There's a lot to look at. So understand the difference, do your homework, and for those of you who do wind up retiring on OPM's disability benefit, understand that once you start getting your benefit, OPM does require you to apply for Social Security disability, which you may or may not get. And if you do get it, it's probably going to be several years later, or at least a year or so later, and there'd be some offset to your pension. But the two benefits combined, what OPM gives you in a reduced amount, plus the Social Security, is going to wind up being more than the OPM retirement benefit alone. And then eventually, when you reach age 62, everything equalizes. But that's discussion for another show.
We're going to be done with this show within a minute or so. So just a question, Bob. I remember many years ago, I worked wherever it was, and somebody fell off a chair, and they were disabled, but she had to go to court. And of course, the employer had to go to court, and she won. But so not, sometimes a disability isn't so easy to get. And with that, true, I think it's time to say adios. Bob, as usual, my pen is emptied with all the notes that I've taken. But I know your phone number. Anyway, Bob, thank you ever so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.